listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Thank you so much for listening. We have a lot to talk about today. First, U.S. Senator Cory Booker, a Democrat out of New Jersey, said those who support Judge Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court are, quote, complicit in evil, unquote. Secondly, the Des Moines Register's editorial board believes that Iowa's voter ID law that's going into effect this year is both unnecessary and it causes confusion. Third, a panel with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in favor of open carry. Surprised? So am I. We'll talk about it. Fourth, a student suspended for wearing a quote-unquote banned Trump t-shirt is awarded $25,000 from the school district in Oregon. Then we discuss Iran and North Korea with retired Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis. Before we get to all that, first a word from American Principles Project.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
And I'm back. On Tuesday, U.S. Senator Cory Booker said that Americans and U.S. senators who support Judge Brett Kavanaugh, President Donald Trump's nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court to replace Justice Anthony Kennedy, are, quote-unquote, complicit with evil. Ryan Saverda, I apologize if I mispronounce his last name, which I probably did. He's a reporter with the Daily Wire, caught him on video. Here's a clip.
There is so much at stake here that this has nothing to do with politics. This is to do with who we are as moral beings. And so I want to call on everybody. I'm not here to tell folk just what they should know. I'm here to call on folk to understand that in the moral moment, there is no neutral. In a moral moment, there is no bystanders. You are either complicit in the evil. You are either contributing to the wrong or you are fighting against it. There's a saying from the Abrahamic faith in one of the Psalms that says, yea, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death. We are walking through the valley of the shadow of death. But that doesn't say, though I sit in the valley of the shadow of death.
Well, now.
It doesn't say that I'm watching on the sidelines of the valley of the shadow of death. It says I am walking through the valley of the shadow of death. It says I am taking agency, that I am going to make it through this crisis. And so I am calling on everyone right now who understands what's at stake, who understands who Kavanaugh is. Maya Angelou says if someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. He has shown us who he is.
After saying this isn't about politics, he makes a very political statement. Senator Booker's right. There are moral moments in which we need to rise above partisanship. We need to rise above political party and ideology at times where we need to stand on principles and speak truth. As Christians, we need to do that all the time. I don't agree with him that this is one of those moments. And I especially love when he misquotes the Bible. That's just great. Let's read what Psalm 23 that he quoted says in its context. He referred to the King James Version. I'm reading the English Standard Version. It says, quote, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Unquote. Before David was king, he was first a shepherd. He understood what a shepherd would do for his sheep. Sheep are dumb animals. They need guidance. They need protection. And David said what he as a shepherd did for his sheep, God the Father did for him. David faced death from King Saul. Later in his life, death at the hand of a rebellious son, Absalom, who temporarily pushed him from the throne. Psalm 23 is a reflection of what God did for David, and we can infer what God does for his people. But it's not about what we do. I'm not clear what Senator Booker meant when he said, Psalm 23 says, I am taking agency that I'm going to make it through this crisis. Psalm 23 isn't about what we do, it's about what God does. And comparing a Supreme Court nomination to the trials and tribulations that King David faced seems trivial. It's an unfortunate misuse of Scripture. So can we stop calling our political opponents evil? And I'm not saying that just to liberals. I'm saying that to conservatives as well. If supporting Kavanaugh, who was about as mainstream as a judicial pick as you can get from the originalist bench, if he's evil, then there's apparently no middle ground, which is unfortunate. Des Moines Register opines on voter ID law. The Des Moines Register's editorial board praised Iowa State's efforts to help students cast ballots, and they said this on Tuesday. Quote, starting next year, voters must provide identification to vote. Those who cannot will need to cast a provisional ballot, which is not immediately counted and must be later approved by a board. This requirement is part of the 2017 GOP-crafted law that amounts to little more than an experiment in voter suppression. It is unnecessary, wastes money, causes confusion, and is being challenged in court, unquote. First, I have to roll my eyes. Anytime I hear the Des Moines Register complain about a waste of taxpayer money, I never once saw such a complaint when Democrats were in power. Secondly, an ID, which almost every resident of voting age has, does not suppress voting. The state is willing to provide those who do not have a voter ID, provide them one free of charge. They will mail that ID to the person. If this is confusing, then I'm sorry, you're just not very bright. Maybe that sounds mean, but this is not hard. Here are the valid forms of ID that could be used. This is directly from the Iowa Secretary of State's website. An Iowa driver's license. If you drive, you have one of these. If you don't have one of these, you're driving illegally. Also, you can use an Iowa non-operator's ID. The state provides those. If you're a member of the military, whether it's active or Army Reserve or National Guard, you have a military ID. You can use a U.S. passport or U.S. passport card. You can use a tribal ID if you are a member of a Native American tribe. You can use a veteran's ID or the voter ID card, which is now available. For those who don't have an ID, the Secretary of State's website says this, quote, any registered voter who does not have a valid driver's license or non-operator's ID issued by the Iowa Department of Transportation will be issued a voter ID card for free automatically in the mail. This also applies to anyone who registers to vote in the future. Upon receipt of the voter ID card in the mail, it should be immediately signed and placed in the voter's purse or wallet and then taken with them to vote. Obtaining the voter ID card does not require any further documentation or action by the voter. Voters simply need to be registered and take their new voter ID card to the polls when they vote. Because when you register to vote, you are already either having to, you have to provide an ID, you have to provide proof of residence, I think there's sworn affidavit if you don't have a piece of like a bill or something that can prove your residence. But so you've gone through this. So basically, this voter ID card is just automatic if you're already registered. This is easy. As far as if it's unnecessary, that's up for debate. You know, should we wait to require voter ID until we have a large scale problem here in Iowa? I don't think so. I think this people are still able to vote. It's easy to vote. It's easy to register to vote. You can still do same-day registration. This is not hard. But the Des Moines Register editorial board has to promote Democratic talking points at any opportunity, apparently. Also, third, just because it's being challenged in court, that doesn't mean jack squat. Things get, laws get challenged all the time, whether they have a good case or not. Just because it's being challenged doesn't mean their argument's valid or good. So, the Ninth Circuit, speaking of courts, the Ninth Circuit Court panel rules in favor of open carry. This is a 3-judge panel for the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. Ruled yesterday that the Second Amendment protects one's right to carry a gun openly outside of the home. Yes, this is the same court that many of us refer to as the Ninth Circuit Court. That's a favorite term of mine for this particular court. They are the most overturned circuit court in the nation, but I think they got it right here. In Young v. Hawaii, the majority wrote, quote, "For better or for worse, the Second Amendment does protect the right to carry a firearm in public for self-defense. We would thus flout the Constitution if we were to hold that in regulating the manner of bearing arms, the authority of the state has no other limit than its own discretion," quoting a particular case. Then they go on, quote, "While many respectable scholars and activists might find virtue in a firearms carry regime that restricts the right to a privileged few, quote, the enshrinement of the constitutional rights necessarily takes certain policy choices off the table," unquote. So that's huge. Also, in you got to remember, there's another panel of the Ninth Circuit Supreme Court that ruled in Peruta v. County of San Diego. They said the Second Amendment does not protect the right to conceal carry, however. So here we've got a tension in those states that are part of the Ninth Circuit Court. Charles C.W. Cook at National Review notes, quote, "Unless the panel's decision is reversed on and blocked, two decisions will have to be reconciled. When that happens, it seems most likely that either A, the court will strike down the open carry bans in Hawaii and California, or B, the court will adopt the argument presented by the plaintiffs in Peruta that a state can choose to ban either open or concealed carry, but it could not prohibit both," unquote. This will be interesting to watch to see what happens and if the Supreme Court ends up ruling on this case. Turning to Oregon, where a school just got dinged for violating the First Amendment. Liberty High School in Hillsboro, Oregon, back in January, suspended a senior, Addison Barnes, for refusing to change or cover up a T-shirt that said, quote, "Donald J. Trump, Border Wall Construction Company," unquote. The shirt also contained a quote from Donald Trump, quote, "The wall just got 10 feet wider, or excuse me, 10 feet taller," unquote. I don't remember where that quote came from, what the reference is. But he wore the shirt to a class on politics on a day when they were going to discuss immigration. And he was suspended for 10 days. Oregon Live reported later that a federal judge issued a temporary restraining order barring the school from prohibiting the T-shirt 1 week before Addison graduated. The U.S. District Judge Michael W. Mosman found that the school district could not justify its censorship. He said he balanced constitutionally protected speech with the orderly running of a school. The school district, he said, is entitled to be concerned about the response of other students to the T-shirt, but the, quote, thin, unquote, court record so far, he said, offered little support for the district's argument that the shirt could, quote, substantially disrupt the school, unquote, he said. So that's interesting. Tinker v. Des Moines actually says that students do not shed their constitutional rights when they walk through the schoolhouse gate. Tinker, however, also had some stipulations to that. You couldn't be disruptive. There was concern about safety. But however, to think that this particular T-shirt was going to jeopardize safety is kind of mind-boggling to me. The Daily Wire reported this week that the school district agreed to a settlement. Quote, the school district and Barnes have now reached an agreement, Barnes' lawyer announced Tuesday. The school's principal, Greg Timmons, will write a letter of apology to Barnes, and the school district will fork over $25,000 to Barnes, unquote. That's a pretty steep price for an asinine policy. There is plenty of court precedent to understand the school's actions are blatantly unconstitutional. If the First Amendment can't protect speech that is unpopular to some, we truly do not have free speech. Now I want to turn to Iran. On Sunday, Iran's President Hassan Rouhani warned the U.S. that war with Tehran would be, quote, the, quote, mother of all wars, unquote, following a speech by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He also warned that, quote, do not play with the lion's tail because you will regret it eternally, unquote. Okay, then. President Trump, of course, had to respond to this. He tweeted on Sunday evening, where he normally responds to things like this. He said, quote, to Iranian, and this is all in caps, by the way, to Iranian President Rouhani, never, ever threaten the United States again, or you will suffer consequences, the likes of which few throughout history have ever suffered before. We are no longer a country that will stand for your demented words of violence and death. Be cautious, unquote. Iran's Foreign Minister Javad Zarif tweeted back on Monday. Of course he did, because this is now the world we live in. He wrote, quote, in all caps, colorless, unimpressed, in the regular caps, quote, the world heard even harsher bluster a few months ago. I'm not entirely sure what he's referring to here. And Iranians have heard them, albeit more civilized ones, for 40 years. We've been around for millennia and have seen the fall of empires, including our own, which lasted more than the life of some countries. Be cautious, he wrote, also in all caps. So I discuss President Trump's tweet to Iran's president and U.S. policy toward Iran and North Korea with Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis. He's a retired Army officer who's been on our podcast before. He serves as a senior fellow and military expert with Defense Priorities, which is a D.C.-based think tank that promotes realistic foreign policy. Colonel Davis retired after 21 years of active service, which included four deployments in the combat zones, twice to Iraq and twice to Afghanistan, as well as service as a U.S. advisor to the Second Republic of Korea Army. He was awarded the Bronze Star Medal for valor at the Battle of 73 Easting during the First Gulf War in 1991. He was awarded a second Bronze Star Medal for service in Afghanistan in 2011. Before we get to that discussion, here's a word from Brian Myers, a senior contributor with Caffeinated Thoughts, about Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a life insurance plan that makes sense for you, call my friend Travis Riswold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. That's Travis Riswold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Hey, Colonel Davis, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us on the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast.
Certainly my pleasure. Always like to be here.
Oh, great. We love having you on. Now, what were your initial thoughts when you read President Trump's tweet on Sunday?
Well, you know, I got to think that, you know, there's times when tough words are useful, and then there's times when tough rhetoric is kind of counterproductive. And I think this kind of falls into that latter category because it could potentially set us up for a troubling possibility and put him in a tough bind, because the he was responding to what President Rouhani had said earlier, which itself was a response to what Secretary Pompeo had said Sunday in a speech. And what Trump said was, you know, you do not threaten the United States because we're not going to allow you to continue doing that. Well,
right.
Of course, you don't go to war because someone threatens you or with words. And so if he continues to do that, Rouhani, then you get into a situation, well, wait a minute, you just said that you're not going to allow him to threaten you with words like that. So now what are you going to do? And then you have to face, you know, either doing something that would not be good, i.e. making good on a threat to take some kind of military action based on that, or you do nothing. And then that kind of makes you look a little bit, you know, like your word doesn't mean anything. Yeah.
Right.
So you really have to be careful with that.
Okay. So, well, you know, going back to Iran, I mean, they've been threatening us for years. this is just something that we should actually, I think, expect from Iran, isn't it?
Well, it is. And as a matter of fact, it's interesting you bring that up. I was actually speaking with a good friend of mine who's an Iranian expat who was actually kicked out after the 79 revolution and absolutely hates the regime as much as anybody that I know. But he was also cringing when that happened, because he said, you know, the last thing you want to do is give him a platform, meaning Rouhani, a platform to continue to spread his vitriol. He said, because the fact is, they say this stuff all the time and have for almost all the time since 79. He said, normally people just ignore it and it just kind of, you know, goes into empty air. But when something like this happens, then everybody plays and it actually gives him a platform he otherwise wouldn't have. And so he's actually saying, you know, there's other things you can do, but that's not helpful to our cause.
Well, yeah, just definitely elevated him, because I mean, I saw Iran's foreign minister then tweeted back, "Color us unimpressed." The world heard even harsher bluster a few months ago. I'm not sure exactly what he's referring to there. And Iranians have heard them, albeit more civilized ones, for 40 years. We've been around for millennia and seen fall of empires, including our own, which lasted more than the life of some countries. Be cautious. So it's like, this is just kind of, I want to say remarkable, but that's probably not the best choice of word to use. But it's remarkable that we're seeing, you know, these world leaders like tweeting at each other like this.
Right. And you know, that doesn't help us out any, frankly, because it does. It gives them a platform. And when you're looking at, you know, the medium of words, whether it's Twitter or dueling press releases or whatever, it actually gives the impression of equality. So both sides are equal, when nothing could be further from the truth. One of the other comments that Rouhani made there was, you know, be careful when you mess with the tail of a tiger.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, it's more like we're messing with the tail of a mouse. Because when you look at the disparity between the economic and the military power of the United States and Iran, I mean, it's almost so small you can't even count it. I think that their total defense spending in 2017 was $14 billion, which, you know, is what we spend on one ship in some cases. So it can't even be compared. And so they are not on our level. There's almost nothing they can do militarily to threaten us, and certainly not economically, because we hold all the levers. We should not get down to the level to where it's a tit for tat and it looks like it's equal, because it's not.
Right. So also, what kind of impact do you think tweets like this have on the morale of, you know, everyday soldiers that are, you know, maybe they're not currently mobilized right now, but it's like, oh, great, our commander-in-chief is, you know, tweeting stuff like this.
Yeah, I think because this has been going on, I mean, all the way going back into the campaign and never stopped, I don't think that, and this is also kind of a negative fallout, I don't think anybody really gives it a lot of serious credibility. It certainly doesn't worry anybody at this point, I think.
Okay, yeah, because it's like, thank goodness policy has not been set because of what he says and does on Twitter.
Well, you know, and that's interesting you bring that point up, because that's actually something I've been writing on here recently, is that, you know, you see a lot of the rhetoric and the words that the president uses, whether it was at the NATO summit in Brussels or at the press conference with Putin in Helsinki, and you see a lot of things he said, and many of which were just you know, head scratchers, you know, on the one side to just like, wait, he didn't just say that, on the other. But when you look at the policies underneath what's going on there, you know, you have to say, well, hey, that's actually pretty good policy for the United States. For example, in the NATO, you know, it was very inappropriate for him to dress down Jens Stoltenberg, the Secretary General of NATO, in public in front of the cameras there. Mm-hmm. But it's perfectly rational to say, hey, look, Germany, you're the economic powerhouse of this continent, and yet you're not even spending barely 1.2% of your GDP, despite years of promising that you're going to go to at least 2%, which itself is a really small number. And it's appropriate for us to say, hey, that's not fair to the United States taxpayer or our soldiers that we're providing your security when you're not willing to do so.
Right.
But unfortunately, that gets lost with, you know, some of the improper, you know, things that he said to him. And that's unfortunate.
Okay. Back to Iran here. You know, what are some of the problems with the idea of U.S.-backed regime change in Iran, which is kind of what President Trump was threatening?
Yeah, it was. And that was almost directly what Pompeo was talking about on Sunday, mm-hmm. which just makes me cringe because, I mean, if we thought that things in Iraq were bad, and they were when we changed regimes there, I mean, it would be substantially worse if we even thought about doing that in Iran, because the population in Iran is four times larger than it was in Iraq. The country mm-hmm. is, of course, substantially larger. And then you can't go in there and just like launch a few missiles like we did in Syria and think that they're going to be passive, because unlike Syria, who was, you know, fighting for their lives within their own country, Iran already has, you know, feelers out and forces outside their country. And so they could, you know, they could actually respond in ways mm-hmm. that would not be in our interest. And there's no reason to provoke something like that, because it's much better for them to remain, you know, in the region and focused on their own survival and their own issues, you know, because politically they have a lot of issues in their country that our external rhetoric doesn't help, because it actually gives them justification to say, look, America's trying to do this to undermine and you've got to stick with us, when otherwise the population is really unhappy with Rouhani and certainly with mm-hmm. Khomeini as well, because mm-hmm. of their economic policies. And that's where we want the focus to be, because they have to actually deal with substance instead of the threat of the United States doing something.
Right. Well, you know, it just made me also think about, you know, under the Obama administration, when we saw that revolutions take place in Egypt and other places, the Obama administration backed some of those. But yet when students rose up in Iran and they had the Green Revolution, you know, a while back, silence. And I'm thinking that, you know, that was the type of, you know, I don't know if we obviously we couldn't formally support, but it would have been nice to have seen some encouragement of those concerns. But yet, you know, that's kind of, you know, if there was a regime change that took place as a result of internal, you know, uprising, you know, that's something that would be encouraged, right? Or that we should be, you know, think that could be positive.
Right. If there's to be regime change, it has to be completely indigenous. And you know, the people themselves, for their own intents and their own purposes, rising up and demanding either, you know, substantial change in the way they're governed, or if they want to, you know, come up with a new form of government, you know, that's something that they have to deal with, because the people who have to live with the outcome is the mm-hmm. one who has to decide how it's going to happen, because that's what actually has a chance to be successful and sustained. But when we try to manage it from the outside or force it from the outside, I think that's when we start to get into real trouble.
Right. You know, I was just thinking, unlike what we saw in Libya and in Egypt, you know, I'm thinking if something happened internally in Iran and there was a regime change, just based on their history, I think it'd probably be more of a moderating influence than what we've seen, you know, what we saw in Egypt and Libya that ended up becoming more radicalized.
You could not be more properly right. You could not be more on spot on that. As a matter of fact, that this Iranian friend I was telling you about, I've actually spoken with a number of his colleagues here also, and, you know, they've long been advocating for regime change from within, but not a violent regime change, but a change that, you know, is of the people. And they believe that that's something that's actually possible. And so there's many people and several, even among some of the wealthy in Iran that definitely want to change the regime. Some of them don't want to like completely eliminate everything that's there, but they want major changes in how it's done. And we should certainly support that, because anything that's going to moderate Iran's external behavior is something we should applaud, or certainly at least tacitly support. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if we don't, even if, for example, they had a different kind of Islamic rule that was more democratic, maybe we don't want to come out and just endorse that, but we should certainly tacitly support it, because that works towards our advantage, because it minimizes the risk that us and our allies in the region face.
Right. So, you know, I'm also, obviously Iran can't, you know, as you mentioned before, can't really challenge us as far as militarily speaking. They don't pose a real threat to us. But within the region, you know, I'm sure there has been some concern, especially with their potential developing nuclear weapon. Do you think it was right for President Trump to pull the United States out of the Iran deal? And if so, what's the path forward?
No, I actually, you know, I've supported the president on a number of things he's doing policy wise, both in NATO, North Korea, and several other places. Mm-hmm. But I got to say that I did not support pulling out of the JCPOA and think that we're going to end up paying consequences of that. In fact, some of them we're already starting to see, and we just hope they don't get too bad. Because here's the point: we had, whether you want to say it was a flawed deal or not, and who wouldn't argue that it was flawed, but it was a deal. And according to both the United Nations and the State Department, they were abiding by the terms of the agreement. You can argue whether it was the spirit, but they certainly were abiding by the terms. There was definitely, and actually still to this day, remains inspectors from the United Nations in there and doing inspections to, you know, to make sure that they don't go to nuclear weapons. Now, if that falls apart completely, in other words, if the European nations who were part of the deal, Russia and China, if they're not able to keep that thing going, well, now then we've lost all of our opportunity to influence what happens from within Iran. Now, if you say the deal's not good, then you have to have a better one. But right now, there's not even a path to a better one, because what incentive internally does Iran have to negotiate a new deal when they saw that we didn't even abide by the previous one? And in terms of moderating them, now Rouhani was definitely seen as a moderate force, but now then he's taken so much heat for the loss of the fact that we pulled out. Now then he's having to go way to the right and to sound more radical himself, or else he's going to lose his own position within the government, which actually may happen anyway. But that would give the hand even more so to the radicals. And again, that works against our own interest, because we want to moderate them. We don't want to push them further into the radical direction. And mm-hmm. the loss of the JCPOA just gave away what influence we had, and there's nothing good to replace it.
Okay. So I want to pivot here and just talk about North Korea. You mentioned you supported President Trump's policy toward North Korea, you know, talking with them. What were your thoughts about his recent summit with Kim Jong-un?
Yeah, you know, there's been lots of criticism of the president from a number of different quarters after that, because they say, oh, it was just a made-for-TV, you know, image. It didn't result in anything. There's no concrete results so far, and as though there should have been concrete results after a single meeting, and that was never realistic. I mean, when mm-hmm. you look at anything that was done, I mean, you know, Reagan, when he went to Reykjavik with Gorbachev and some of the agreements that followed from there, I mean, they were like a year, 2 years in the process, some even longer than that. The initial agreed framework with the Clinton administration, as flawed as that was, it still took well over a year to negotiate. We're only like 2 months into this, maybe even less than that formally. And the thought that we're going to get any kind of an agreement in that short period of time is just unrealistic and doesn't understand how international diplomacy works. So this is going to take some time. But the president was right a couple of days ago when he said, look, when was the last time they fired a missile? You know, 9 months ago. And a test, a nuclear test, was even longer ago than that. And so now you see that apparently reports that they're actually are dismantling their engine test site, which is where they developed a lot of their long-range weapons. And so they're actually taking some concrete steps. They have not done some of the things that they promised they wouldn't do. And as long as that's the case, then things are on a good path. But I will say that, you know, the expectation should be that this is going to continue to go in ebbs and flows, and there's going to be positive developments, there'll be negative developments, but we always have to be moving towards the, you know, the ultimate objective of reducing the threat to the United States, and right now we're on a path to do that.
Great. So, yeah, that was good to see. I personally was a little when they announced an agreement, you know, I kind of, when I read through it, I kind of rolled my eyes. I mean, you're right that we shouldn't have maybe expected a solid agreement. But then I kind of wish the Trump administration didn't actually kind of, you know, put this out there as this grand accomplishment.
Well, and that is right. That's a fair criticism as well. If I'm taking some of the his critics to task on that, then he himself also is not helping his case by making it sound like there was something concrete done and it was a major thing when it was actually the beginning. Early on, he actually said correctly that this is the beginning of a process, and Secretary Pompeo said this is the beginning, and that part is correct. But I think he wanted more credit than he has earned thus far, and that didn't help either. You're right.
Great. Well, I'm kind of at the end of my questions. Is there anything else you want to add that I haven't asked, I guess, about Iran?
Yeah,
North Korea?
I think back to Iran, I think it's really, really important for people to understand that that they represent no military threat to American security interests because of the disparity in powers I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. And there's too many people that want to say, yes, but they are doing these nefarious things throughout the region. You know, they support terrorism here and there as though that's a reason for us to potentially go to war. And that's not a reason to go to war because the consequences to that to us could be so great.
Right.
There's other ways to minimize that stuff. But American military power should only be used if American interests are directly attacked or directly threatened. And short of that, we have to use other means. Because the fact is, you can't stop everything that's happening everywhere. And if you try, all you're going to do is make matters worse for yourself. You're going to spend more money than you need to. Mm-hmm. And that's going to drain our treasuries, and it's going to dissipate our military power. And I think there's an underappreciation for how much we dissipate our ability to respond to actual potential existential fights that we may, God forbid, have to fight one day with, you know, a conventional fight with North Korea or China or Russia anywhere. I mean, those are the things that we need to be putting our stock in so that we have military readiness to face, you know, potential serious threats, as opposed to dissipating on these ones that are actually either minor or not even necessary.
Great. Well, you know, I was just thinking too, you know, as far as we may not necessarily have to engage militarily, but, you know, Israel seems to be ready to address that particular challenge if needed, you know, as far as if
that's exactly right. In fact, that's a really good point because of all the help that we've given them over the decades, I mean, they are the military power in that region. And the idea that Iran is going to threaten their existence is just not sustainable by or not supportable by the evidence because they are so overwhelmingly stronger. And just as important in terms of the regional dynamics is the growing, you know, friendship between Israel and Saudi Arabia,
right.
Even Israel and Russia continues to kind of contain Iran despite that. I mean, Ian, that's even with their, you know, weakening internal situation that makes it less likely for them to do anything abroad because they have to worry about their internal dynamics. All that together, it just reinforces the reason why any kind of thought of using military force from the United States right now is just a bad idea, and it's not even necessary.
Right. Well, hey, as always, it's a pleasure to have you on, Colonel Davis. We appreciate your insight.
You bet. It's been my pleasure.
All right. Hey, take care. Thank you so much. And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening to our podcast somewhere other than on our website, please make sure you go check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. That's caffeinated, CAFFEINATED, thoughts.com. Or you could just Google us, Caffeinated Thoughts, and we'll show up at the top of your search screen. Also, be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and also you can sign up for our email updates on the website. That way you don't miss a single article. You can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, I guess it's called. Be sure to give us 5 stars if you decide to rate us. We'd appreciate it. You can also find us on Google Play, Podbean, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. If you're not a subscriber, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode, and you can listen using your favorite podcast app. Until next time, my friends, this is Shane Vanderhart. Take care.